Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to a special edition of On Deadline, where we're diving into a singular topic and from one of our premier stations. WWL Radio is the heartbeat of New Orleans, and they're looking back at Hurricane Katrina 20 years later. They have special reports all week, and they'll have extensive live coverage all day on Friday and throughout the weekend. Listen to WWL on your smart speaker, smartphone, desktop, or wherever you listen. To remember what one of America's greatest cities went through to get where it is now.
Hurricane Katrina made landfall at 6:10 a.m. on August 29th, 2005. It blasted through Louisiana and Mississippi. That is a day we'll never forget. From hosts and anchors in the studio, to reporters on the ground, to residents struggling through the storm, and experts we relied on, WWL Radio worked tirelessly through one of the most devastating catastrophes to ever hit the United States. The levees broke, but New Orleans' spirit did not. I'm Dave Cohen at WWL. Here's just some of our coverage as the storm approached, slammed into this region, and the following struggles to react and recover.
My fear is absolutely that the models are correct. And that this is going to prove to be a truly killer storm.
Cautiously optimistic. It keeps moving west. However, I am getting gas.
Oh yeah, we out of here. We're gone.
WWL First News at 7:05. Good morning, I'm Don Ames.
And I'm Richard Hunter.
Hurricane Katrina's forecast path looks worse for Louisiana today. I'm Dave Cohen.
Southeast Louisiana is now in the direct path of Hurricane Katrina.
That's the word from the National Hurricane Center.
This is a really large system as a rule, and it's going to get bigger. And it's a very good possibility that it'll be a Category 4.
Lieutenant Dave Roberts at the National Hurricane Center says that's bad news for a big chunk of the Gulf Coast, including metropolitan New Orleans.
Looks like the model cluster is kind of concentrating anywhere from Alabama into Louisiana.
Dr. Walter Maestri with Jefferson Parish Emergency Management talked about the time frame involved for an evacuation.
We know we need somewhere between 60, 72 hours to have a good chance to get the people out of here. This storm's not giving us that right now. The state plan calls for 50 hours to get everybody out. We're not sure we're even going to get those 50 hours.
Governor Kathleen Blanco has placed Louisiana under a state of emergency, and should an evacuation order be necessary, she says she doesn't want residents to be caught off guard.
We don't need to panic, but I think Louisiana people are pretty smart about this stuff, and we need to know where we're going to be. We need to be safe, all of us.
New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin is considering a big decision.
Come first day, first break of light in the morning, you may have the first mandatory evacuation in the city of New Orleans' history.
The National Hurricane Center is strongly urging him to issue a mandatory evacuation for New Orleans.
He said the storm surge on this particular hurricane could reach 20 to 25 feet. He said you do not have a levee system that can handle that.
Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard says anyone who has not left yet really should. He says if the track holds and we get a major hit, you won't want to be here.
The aftermath of a storm that could be as powerful as this is predicted to be is likely to cause power outages for a significant period of time.
He says the best thing people can do is to leave.
Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco says all of the forecast information from the National Hurricane Center tells her that Louisiana will take a blow from Hurricane Katrina.
We can count on it being destructive. So we must protect
our families.
That's why she and local leaders are urging everyone who can to evacuate from Greater New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana.
We're going to just pray that everyone gets out safely.
And the White House says President Bush has issued an emergency declaration for Louisiana in the face of Hurricane Katrina.
Mike Brown, the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
When I went to bed at midnight last night till I got up at 5 o'clock this morning and looked at the BlackBerry and saw the latest forecast, I was amazed as you were about this huge shift to the west. And we understand how disastrous it can be, and that's why we're taking this very seriously. And one of the places that we chose to do serious catastrophic disaster planning was New Orleans, because of the fact that it does sit below sea level, because of the lake, because of the bowl effect that you have there.
Mayor Nagin has just stepped to the podium. He's taking a drink of water, and all of the officials line up behind him. I see Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco is here. We have the sheriff here. We have police chief here. We have this commander of the Louisiana State Police. So this will be a comprehensive news conference with officials from the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana. Here's New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're here for our update on Hurricane Katrina. As most of you know, the storm is intensifying. As a result of that, I am this morning declaring that we will be doing a mandatory evacuation, and I'm going to read the evacuation order to the public.
What we are hearing bottom line from this press conference is that New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin has issued a mandatory evacuation for the city of New Orleans, with the only exceptions being those people who are in defined shelters, hotels, and hospitals. The main shelter, he says, will be the Louisiana Superdome, which will open at noon. 4,000 Louisiana National Guard troops are now in the city of New Orleans, and we have seen that many of them are at the Superdome. A mandatory evacuation for the city of New Orleans. It is now illegal to reside in the city of New Orleans if you are not in a hospital, hotel, or shelter, according to New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin. Enforcing that, he admits, will be difficult. He says if people insist on staying in their homes, there's not much they can do, but he says that that would be foolish, and he does not want people to do that.
You know, if you're still hearing us and you haven't left yet, or you haven't made plans on leaving, please leave. I hate to say this, but I just don't have enough body bags.
If you're staying, and we beg you not to stay, if you can go, then you need to keep these following things handy, or you need to purchase them now if the stores are open now. You need to have things like an axe or a pick or a hammer or tools that if flooding forces you up into your attic, you have the ability to pierce through your attic so you do not suffer the fate of those in Betsy who were drowned in their attic.
It is time to run.
Whether they're loading their cars to evacuate or fortifying their homes to try and ride out Katrina, people are rushing their hurricane plans to completion.
Yeah, we're trying to move out.
We're staying, I think.
We put a lot of hurricane protection in recently to secure the third floor.
Woke up, saw what was going on, and made reservations right outside Birmingham.
Homes are being boarded up, businesses too, storm drains being cleared out as people prepare for the onslaught of a very serious Hurricane Katrina.
And on Jefferson Highway, you still there, Ann?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here, girl, and I was just calling to tell you I just got off of Airline Highway. It took me 2 hours to get from Transcontinental to David Drive.
On Airline?
On Airline, and then I get over to Jefferson Highway, and it's moving a little bit, but it's still a parking lot, just like Airline Highway was.
Contraflow is obviously in effect, and you can only get on I-10 West, and it was pretty much gridlock on both sides of the interstate.
People get into sort of a herd mentality, and it's follow the leader, but you have to do some independent thinking and look at a map and use these alternate routes. Certainly, if people are going up north and they're looking for shelter on that emergency evacuation guide, so we're encouraging people. If north is the real option, east is certainly a viable option, but west, please choose something else.
Past I-10 is where we're sitting in slow traffic. We're not stalled or anything, but we're moving. It's just a lot of patience. Like a lot of people on the road are aware that, you know, leave the road rage at home.
That part's been good. Knock on a lot of wood. That part has been fantastic.
It is
clean. I mean, we're doing 80 miles an hour up 59 up north. You know, you had a little bottleneck right at the contra flow, and other than that, it's been nothing. The scenario here is not as good. The traffic is backed up on Airline Highway all the way to Tulane and Carrollton, and nobody is moving. People are out of their cars. They're commiserating. A couple of them are walking their dogs, and people are just sitting there.
And anybody
and when
else?
I say it's backed up, Garland, I mean it's not moving.
The Superdome will not open as a shelter of last resort until noon, but already hundreds of people have made their way to the Superdome, driving cars, walking, taking buses, getting here by any means they can. They're lined up, they're camping out along the streets, along the sidewalks, and under the buildings near the Superdome, waiting for it to be open. Hundreds of people showing up, some with suitcases, bottled water and food in hand, others with nothing but the clothes on their back.
The city of New Orleans is under mandatory evacuation. Everyone is advised to leave the area.
Officer J.O. Fouché, Jr. drives the district.
We have a Category 5 hurricane coming.
The curfew is still in effect, so it is illegal to be on the street right now. Mm-hmm. You will be arrested. Your car could be confiscated.
Hey, I got to be one of the unluckiest people around here right now. I just got back in town from Iraq 2 days ago. And spent 11 months there, and I was being shot at and everything else. And I come home, and now I tried to get out of town.
Yeah.
I tried every way I could to get a car yesterday. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the city's got a car. I wouldn't give them up one way or the other.
But we have a bunch of people that didn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them with my family here. They just got a bunch of elderly people. These people didn't have nowhere else to go.
The main outer core is approaching Empire and Port Sulphur right now in Plaquemine Parish. It is just passing just to the west of Grand Isle. Get ready. This the most intense part of the storm is getting ready to come across.
The awesome power of Hurricane Katrina is making itself known here on the west bank of Jefferson Parish. The corner here of Belterre and Ames Boulevard, the streetlights are being ripped down from the wires and crashing to the ground below. Trees are toppling, crossing the road, and there is just an amazing amount of wind-blown water coming down the street, ripping trees from their roots, and those are then blowing away.
I'm looking at what was a street that is now a river of raging rapid floodwaters. Homes along the street, the fences have been torn down. The roofs are coming off, shingles are flying, and at the intersection, a string of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stoplights has crashed to the ground. Pieces of glass and metal shattering and flying down the street.
Orleans officials have only been able to begin finding out what Katrina has left behind.
There are a lot of areas throughout the city that still are covered with water. New Orleans East, the Ninth Ward, Lakeview, parts of uptown, a lot of damage.
NOPD Chief Warren Riley says windows in the CBD are blown out and cars are flooded across the area. He's asking for patience from all residents in order to move forward.
You can't drink the water. It's not safe. There's no electricity, very little phone service. Everywhere you look, there's debris. Right here, a street sign laying in the middle of the road. There's an entire fence here that used to be on a house across the street. The street next to me is a river with raging rapids.
The urge to return home is a strong one, but even as Katrina leaves the Gulf Coast, evacuated residents are being urged to stay put.
Stay where you are. You're safe, and we need to do our work.
Emergency Management Director Walter Maestri says they have a lot of work evaluating damage, determining the extent of loss, and checking demolished buildings or any bodies.
Nagin says people are stranded on top of their homes in the lower Ninth Ward. Bodies are floating in the water in Eastover and the Bywater. Nagin says boats will be dispatched later today to help in rescuing those stranded. And he's
Geez, this is worse than anything I've seen. That's what our engineer Dominic Mitchum said as we started to drive around and look at the damage left by Hurricane Katrina. Huge trees blocking road after road after road. The roads without trees in them, 2, 3, 4 feet of water sitting in the road. Fences, chimneys, windows, doors, everything knocked down, blown out, destroyed. This is widespread devastation. This is unbelievable.
What a mess. Anyway, let me reiterate, folks. Downtown New Orleans looks like somebody dropped a bomb on it. It looks like Beirut. There's broken glass everywhere, structural damage. I don't think any of these tall buildings are going to topple over, nothing like that. But it's just not safe. Jefferson Parish is under martial law. Nobody's allowed back in there. You know what? You just be in the way. There's trees down everywhere. There's still flooding everywhere. North Kenner from Vets all the way to the lake is just flooded.
It's just a mess. So stay home. Stay tuned to WWL. We'll bring you every piece of information that we can get our hands on.
And I'm back. I'm Bob Del Giorno. Christian, my producer, is sitting here. He's been with me all night long. Your impression of what's going on. So now we keep hearing the helicopters. We're like in a bunker here in the front lines during a war. Our windows are all blown out. Yesterday, during the storm, it was just horrendous. The windows breaking, blasting through, glass flying.
You can feel the building moving.
The building moving. It was quite an experience. But we talked to people who are stuck in homes and need emergency service and are calling here.
Well, it's flooded. It's about 6 feet. My house is underwater.
Wave that sheet for all you're worth.
Oh, definitely. We've been doing
that. You're up on the roof.
We seen helicopters just passing us. We don't have nothing. We're on in New Orleans East Apartments on Chef Ventura Highway. They have about 70 people. They got children. They got diabetics. They got people with heart problems. We are in a disaster. The roofs is off the buildings. We cannot climb to the roof. We have no food. We have no water.
How much water is in the street below?
Oh, well, we can't even get to the highway.
I mean, can you see it, though?
No, you got water coming from the back of the canal.
You were there at the hospital?
Yes.
The roof blew off?
On the sixth floor, yeah. Water's not there. Sewage is backing up. The nurses are bagging patients in the dark. The generator ran out of diesel, and supplies are getting low. And we seem like to be forgot about out here, and we're the only hospital out here. And
how many patients you got in there?
I already got over 600 people here with patients and family members with staff.
What are they doing? How are they handling it?
Hot. Aggravated. Just want to know if somebody knows that we still here. I got patients getting sick, staff starting to get sick. It's just want to know if anybody's going to come out and see about getting us out of here. The National Guard, they put you very sad. It's like
the National Guard is there, you said?
Yeah, but they're not, you know, it's like nobody's communicating with them. And they're not, you know.
Well, that's one of the problems they've been having is the communications abilities have all been lost. The police are having trouble communicating with each other, and the National Guard's having trouble communicating, and they're struggling with it.
It's unconscionable. How can you walk by an old lady who needs your help to go break in a store? They came out with tennis shoes and DVD players and jewelry. Not water, not food.
Oh, we sitting over here. I have my 4 grandkids, my daughter and my husband, and we don't have any food or water. I called 911 I don't know how many times, and they tell us they can't do nothing for us. I tried to call Red Cross. I tried to call FEMA. I don't get no answer from them.
I have, it was just me, my husband, a 3-year-old and a newborn. So we're stuck over here on College Court off of Earhart. With no water, and one of the babies is running a high fever.
Okay. First thing you need to do is call 911.
That's what I've been doing.
And you told them you have a baby running a high fever.
I haven't gotten in touch with anyone.
It's a busy signal.
Yeah. No. They're saying that this call cannot be completed.
Can you get in the attic?
No, the attic was broken. It can't hold any weight. We've tried that one.
Okay.
But it was destroyed some
Can
months
Can you get
ago.
On the roof?
No, we don't have a ladder.
You won't need one soon. You can float to the roof. Who's with you?
I have several other people with me.
Adults?
Yeah, we got a few adults. Some
strong
young mothers.
Men.
Any men?
Yeah, two.
Okay, you get them. You go to the window. You get them to hoist you up onto the roof.
Mm-hmm.
They hand you the babies.
Okay.
One of them hoists the other one up onto the roof.
Okay.
And then the one who's on the roof pulls the other one up. Thousands of people being rescued from their rooftops and attics.
Yes.
Any idea in the city of New Orleans how many people have been rescued?
3,000 or 3,200. There's a lot more people who need assistance.
And you're coming to get them.
And we're doing our best.
I'm calling from the BW Cooper Housing.
And what's the water situation there?
The water looks like it's about... By the porch, it looks like it's about 5 feet. But, in the middle towards Erattle Street, it looks like it's almost about, 6 feet.
Have you had any luck trying 911?
911 is busy, and the other number, you can't get through. And we have a lot of people up in our house. We have children and everything, elderly people. I mean, we need to get away from here. They don't have nobody coming in the area. I mean, we can see the helicopters flying around over by the interstate, by the bridge. They have people just sitting there, just standing and waiting.
New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin is very, very angry.
You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need?
Nagin says he doesn't know if it's the president's or the governor's fault.
And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now. This is ridiculous.
I don't want to see
anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences.
We don't do
another press conference until the resources are in this city, and then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
And I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law precedent it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We're both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. Oh.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
Can we take a break?
So, that's what it sounded like in New Orleans on August 29th, 2005. Terror. Hopelessness. 911 calls that went to busy signals. Women worried about their babies, finding ladders to try to climb onto roofs. But the city didn't stay there. It found a way to move forward. Here's Newell Normand with what it took to get New Orleans back.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
After Katrina.
And the reason why we are sinking is because we levied the river for trade that benefits the whole country. And Katrina was caused by basically an engineering failure of the National U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, not by anything that anybody here did wrong. So, yeah, as you can tell, it got under my skin a little bit. And 20 years later, we're still having the same conversation.
Now, you're having an event called Action in the Face of Adversity, Recovery, Reform, and How It Got Done to commemorate this. Nobody had ever experienced the breadth and depth of the devastation that was heaped upon us by this cataclysmic event. And they just miss it.
Yeah,
I don't know what your thoughts are.
No. I mean, you know, that's the whole reason, Noel, we're doing this event, is that we wanted to create, memorialize, and be able to send out the facts on the ground, which is that this was a much more nuanced event, that there were extraordinary heroic acts over, frankly, not just in the aftermath, but over many years to help bring this place back. In many ways better than before, and that these kind of simplistic, trite, cliched ideas and images really do a disservice again, not just to the people of New Orleans, but to the entire country and world, because there are a lot of lessons that can be learned from this if it's seen in its totality. And so, yeah, it was because, and in some cases, Noel, I think it is, it's just laziness. In some cases, it's ideological. There seem to be publications, both domestic and international, that want to be able to look down on this place and ask why those crazy Cajuns ever build down there by the water. But in any case, I think it's very important that we speak truth to the media and to the public. And hopefully what we're creating today will last and inform the media and maybe even research going forward. So that's why we're doing our own version of almost a story core for the folks that made it happen 20 years ago.
And look, it's not, and you and I have talked about this. It didn't all go perfectly, right? And nor it could it ever, quite frankly, with so many moving parts and so many things outside of the control of leaders, whether it was business leaders, government leaders, or otherwise. You were never going to herd everything that needed to be herded in order to get it done. But if we look critically as where we are 20 years later, I just had Glade Bilby on this afternoon. They're going to have, I guess, a groundbreaking of they're going to start working on the roof of the municipal auditorium. You know, $38 million has been sitting out there forever and a day. That's been dedicated to that facility, and that's how FEMA works, as you well know. You know, it's dollars to restore, you know, what's there, not to necessarily improve, but to restore, and you got to figure out how to leverage that. And it's just it's kind of a shame, you know. And you know, we still got some big projects like the Lindy Box on you know, over there in Mid City, sitting there. Totally destroyed in there. It looks like Plaza Tower may have a lifeline, you know, that's come their way. But just we still, 20 years later, have a lot to do, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that you could certainly point out the places that we have failed. I think it's important to point out the places where we have succeeded. You know, for example, the most basic one that the world doesn't necessarily appreciate, which is that the $15 billion hurricane and storm damage system that we put in the water around the South Shore means that if we were hit by a Hurricane Katrina-like event tomorrow, we would be bone dry. We fixed that one. Yeah. And I was talking to Doug Thornton at an event yesterday at the dedication for Bob Livingston over at the UNO Tech Park. And he said, you know, Michael, looking back on the dome and looking back on everything that we had to do to bring back a city that and a region that was almost 100% underwater for weeks, he said, I don't think people understand how close this place was to not coming back, how many extraordinary efforts, and in some cases, how many things had just to fall into place in order for us to not just come back, but to come back to the point where we just hosted the greatest Super Bowl ever, where we have a burgeoning tech sector, where we're building the only greenfield new multi-billion dollar port in the country, where we're the epicenter of the energy revolution, where we're still the number two or number one city in America for travelers. This was not foregone as a conclusion in the weeks and months after Katrina. It was a lot of efforts. And there are many people who get credit, including one who I think does not get enough credit, is Kathleen Blanco. A lot of people are mentioning that to me, Governor Blanco.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there were some things that were done. Obviously, the immediate response to the storm was not good. And, you know, I did a piece that we're going to air on WWL about, you know,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Folks asked me about what was the most frustrating thing in the aftermath of Katrina, and I said it was the level of friction that existed between the federal government, state government, and local government. And it was like we were constantly fighting our own in order to figure out what the next steps were going to be. And a lot of that is, you know, and I think a lot of folks learned a very important lesson. You cannot rely on FEMA. And it's not a criticism of FEMA. FEMA is a part-time agency. I've said this a million times. If you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. So you got to figure out how to control it. And that requires investment at the local level. There's a big discussion about the future of FEMA. And I did my monologue on this morning. We can do it better, more effective, and efficiently. The problem that we have is that we cannot risk our agencies by putting them out there, putting the human capital, having to backfill with overtime and creating these task forces if we don't have a paymaster that can make us whole in a very short period of time, whether that be the state or the federal government. And without that
reimbursement period, right?
Yeah. I mean, it cannot be you're closing your books on Katrina. I think we closed our Katrina books in 2015 or 16, not because of any fault of our own. We had already done it. We've already rehabbed all the stuff that we had money for, was just trying to get the money. I mean, but, you know, I was one of those that I had enough money set aside. I didn't have to borrow any money of any of those loan programs because I recognize that we had to set ourselves up financially to be able to sustain ourselves for a long period of time, and I couldn't rely on anybody else. But not everyone has the ability to do so for a whole host of reasons and constraints. You know, and hopefully we're going to be able to redefine FEMA. I don't think FEMA should go away by any stretch of the imagination, but we ought to redefine their role. And because I do strongly believe that we can do it better than they can. If the alignment is right. Your thoughts?
No, I think that's right. And what FEMA brings is scale, right? Because it's the entire nation. So we need to figure a way to federalize that scale to get the cash where it needs to be. But then always, yeah, local control is going to be quicker and more relevant. So I think it's entirely appropriate to rethink it. But I do think that cash flow issue is, is the key one. And another part of this, and this was something that General Honoré, the Category 5 general, first said to me, and I've never forgotten it. It's that as a nation, we have to learn to get to the left side of the disaster curve, which means to put in policies and to execute on those policies so that when there is a natural hazard, and we're going to see more and more of them in the future, they don't become disasters. That's really the only way out of this, is to make sure that we no longer have to be resilient in the sense that we get knocked down and get back up again, but we're resilient in the true scientific sense, which is that we actually don't break in the first place. And that is... That's truly the way out of this as a nation, to not have to rely on FEMA because we've built and planned our communities in a way that they don't get flooded or they don't burn down. And so we need to work on both sides, both parts of the equation.
Yeah, the one component that's, you know, the frailty of what I discussed is that, you know, when we elect leaders or, you know, what we think are leaders, they can't be afraid to make a decision. And in the aftermath of Katrina, we had a lot of folks that were really afraid to make decisions. And there was kind of a short-term hiatus for some who ultimately ended up making decisions, and I would put Aaron Broussard in that category. He finally started making decisions and standing up to be the leader that a lot of folks knew him to be. And when he did, you know, what happened to Jefferson Parish is it just took off. I mean, yep. And we came back faster than anyone.
That's right.
Because we recognized that we could once we started making decisions, you know. But, you know, the city, unfortunately, wallowed in indecision for a long, long time. I mean, maybe a decade after the storm.
It's why you need a military-type leader to say either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And otherwise, the political disincentives for making a decision can really cause a place to stagnate for even longer than it needs to.
Well, you know, that's why I tell folks, when you're electing your mayor, you have to have someone that's going to be willing to consume political capital. You cannot fear it, you know, because if you do, it'll just gobble you up. And then you wallow in indecision and you don't know how to turn it around. And quite frankly, more often than not, when you engage in a delay, hence, you know, Governor Blanco, you don't recover.
Yep.
And it ends up consuming you, right?
Yeah, it's I was just talking to somebody and they said, when you think about electing your next mayor, you have to think about you're electing them for wartime, not peacetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's true in many respects. Well, we'll let you get off to your important event, and we thank you for joining us. And final thoughts?
I just want to let everybody know, everybody who suffered and lost through Katrina in the immediate aftermath in the years following, that there are so many people out here who are still fighting, who are still being compelled to move forward by that memory. And the way that we are intending to honor those who suffered and lost is by continuing to build a city and region that fulfills its true promise. So even though Katrina was a generation ago, its memory and the power of that memory is still very fresh.
Yep, absolutely. Michael, as always, thank you so much for your time and your insight. And welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mark Earhart, president of the Earhart Group. And Mark and his family, they've had their finger on the pulse of the community, the growth, the challenges, and through thick and thin of this community. Well, Mark, you know, there's so many different aspects of Katrina, you know, of what was going on during the event itself and the immediate aftermath and then 30 days post-Katrina. I don't know that anyone really has given it from a perspective. Let me rephrase this. A lot of it falls on the wayside for me, having been right there in the thick and thin of it for a long time during the storm and preparation for the storm and the aftermath of the storm and trying to help jurisdictions throughout, and not only Jefferson Parish. And then when I watch the national stories, I've never seen documentaries kind of miss the point so much, you know, about what was actually happening on the ground. It's a little disappointing, but they were a lot of tough issues, and I know that you've seen them and you've helped companies come back from the devastating impact of that storm economically, financially, and otherwise.
You know, we were still a fledgling business just trying to grind it out in 20 years ago, and when everything happened, you know, we had a decision to make. And I remember my dad at one point, and this is a couple of years after the storm, he said, everybody in South Louisiana, and now this is extended in across the entire Gulf Coast, I mean, from Panama City to Lake Charles, in the last 20 years, every single person who is living here today has made the decision on whether to come back. And they've made the decision to live here because we all had to leave. Right. Everybody had to leave, whether it was for 24 hours, whether in my case, It took us 5 years to get back to Lakeview. And we all had to make that decision. And there are certain things that come with that decision. And, you know, because we decided to stay and build. And that sort of, in my mind, applies to everybody, regardless of where you come from in the community and the type of work you do and what you're interested in. Everybody common, we have in common is that we've all decided to come here and stay here and build. I will tell you that the toughest thing 20 years later for me to do is really explain what happened to my kids, because my daughter is going to be 20 years old September 16th. My wife was 9 months pregnant when we evacuated from Polk Street in Lakeview. And it was funny because the lady next door, who never came back, she had her daughter ask us that we were leaving because there's an old wives' tale, apparently, that low pressure systems, weather patterns can cause women to go into labor. So we had like three people call us, including my mama, to make sure we were leaving town. So my wife wouldn't go into labor. But we, you know, my son is 15 and they're asking questions like, why did this happen? Can it happen again? Why are people saying this about New Orleans today? Right. And it's hard. It's difficult because I'm trying to talk to them about what took place. And I don't believe, I'm confident that it wouldn't happen again in terms of, you know, the city and the flood infrastructure and everything. I took my son by the 17th Street Canal yesterday because we've been watching some of the specials and things, and I wanted to show him what everything looked like. And I don't think he ever laid eyes on where that break was. And it's just starting, I don't know. I'm having a difficult time 20 years later trying to sort through a lot of where we are today.
And part of the problem that we have here is we've actually developed our economy around disasters, because the best years that we've ever had, actually, as it relates to infrastructure improvement, is the funding that we receive from the federal government as a result of a disaster. That's not a good thing. And, you know, and as we struggle to move from a third tier city to a second tier city, and as we struggle to reverse the out-migration pattern that is set in here for a number of years, and I know you follow it closely, and that's why I bring this up, we got to do things a little different, I think. Your thoughts?
I agree. And I think there's something I've learned over the last couple of years is, you know, I do better if I measure backward. And I think if we measure where New Orleans is today, but we measure backward, where were we 20 years ago versus today? We can see and be grateful for extreme progress that's been made in the city. At the same time, when I, and you, this was so stark in over the, like 10 years ago and stuff, and it's just as stark now, when I go to other cities around the country, I see cities that work. They work in terms of the buses run on time, the streets are repaired. You know, there are people who are moving from place to place. There's activity, there's commerce, right? And I believe we've been told in the city of New Orleans that, oh, you know what? This is just the way it is now, right? Garbage once a week. This is just the way it is now. Having to park your car on the neutral ground. Well, that's just the way it is now. And personally, I just don't think that's true. And I think every person in the city has the right and expectation that the city should work. And if I'm running for mayor, the only thing that I'm ever talking about in my campaign is crime, roads, sewage and water board. Everything else, if we get those things right, everything else takes care of itself. And 20 years later, as we look at this, because we're already seeing it, we're faced with all these stories from outside about whether we should rebuild the city or not and that kind of stuff. The Economist did an article where the headline was, why are we still subsidizing a sinking city? That reporter should be ashamed of herself for writing a story like that. At the same time, the people of New Orleans should expect more from the people we elect, because this isn't just the way we have to live with it. We should demand a city that works, because the people of New Orleans work. And it just, that's, we just shouldn't settle for second best anymore, and we shouldn't be told we have to. That's where I think we should be.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.